If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
When someone goes missing, time doesn't stop, but the world often moves on. For families, every day without answers becomes a kind of waiting room where hope and grief exist side by side. We've covered hundreds of cases on this podcast, and we try to offer follow-ups whenever we can because the person's story doesn't end when our episode does. This week, we're revisiting four cases that we've previously covered: Chance Engelbert, Mary Johnson, Sage Smith, and Trudy Appleby. Because in 2025, each of these cases saw significant developments. Some brought long-awaited answers, while others brought more painful questions. All of them remind us why it's so important to keep these stories alive. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to update you on the stories of Chance Engelbert, Mary Johnson, Sage Smith, and Trudy Appleby. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, of course, this is another one, since it's an update episode. That's a little bit different because you obviously know about these stories.
Obviously.
And we might have talked a little bit about some of the updates as well, but I don't think you actually know about, or at least not the details of a lot of these.
No, I don't think I do.
Yeah. But it's crazy because I feel like there's just been so much big news lately. It seems as though every week, you know, I'm getting a DM, I'm getting tagged in something where somebody's saying, hey, did you hear about this case? Did you hear about that case? Because big stuff has been happening.
Yeah. Well, that's good, though, right?
Yeah. No, it's great. But I mean, like I said, obviously,
well, it's a mixed bag, I guess.
Yeah. A lot of the updates aren't good updates. But again, it's just I do feel like when it's bad, it's better than not knowing. And, you know, a lot of these cases that have gone cold were actually seeing forward momentum, which is always exciting. For those of you who follow us on social media, whenever we do get updates, I kind of talk about them there, but this is really just an opportunity to go more in depth. So today, we're bringing you identifications, suspects, and answers to some questions, but of course, not answers to everyone. So let's get started talking about the latest updates. The first case we're going to talk about is Chance Engelbert. We first told the story of Chance Engelbert in 2022. He was a 25-year-old husband and new father from Wyoming who vanished in July 2019 after an argument with his in-laws on a trip to visit them in Gearing, Nebraska. For years, rumors and accusations flew about foul play, but there was just no evidence to prove anything. I mean, as in so many of our cases. For years, Chance's family and friends held out hope and organized searches. Now, 6 years later, 2025 finally brought the answer to what happened, though it's not the answer that many expected or perhaps wanted. In October 2025, two hikers in Scotts Bluff National Monument came across human skeletal remains in a rugged, remote area on the north side of the park. Forensic experts used dental records and DNA to confirm that the remains were, in fact, Chance Engelbert. And this discovery was obviously huge. After years of fruitless searches across Nebraska and Wyoming, Chance had been found just a few miles from where he was last seen on surveillance video in Tarrytown, Nebraska. Authorities in Nebraska quickly announced their conclusion. Chance's death was accidental.
Okay. I'm very curious.
Yeah. A joint press release from the Scottsbluff County Attorney's Office and the Gearing Police Department stated that, quote, after a full investigation, there is no evidence that the death of Chance Engelbert was anything other than accidental, end quote.
Okay, that's like definitive but vague at the same time.
Exactly, right? The working theory is that Chance died in a fall. The Douglas County Coroner's Office reported a pattern of blunt force trauma injuries, quote, most consistent with a rapid deceleration event, including but not limited to a fall from height, end quote. Noting that the likely fall ranged from about 130 to 290 feet.
So he fell down a hill?
Basically, yeah. The area where his remains were found is known for its steep bluffs and drop-offs. So investigators now believe that Chance walked into the National Monument area and fell from a rocky ledge in the dark.
Whoa. That's completely crazy.
Yeah. I don't think that's what anybody was thinking. It was such an unexpected conclusion to this case. I mean, on one hand, it finally answered the main question, which is where is Chance? But on the other hand, it dashed whatever slim hopes there were of finding him alive. But now there's an even bigger question, which is how did Chance end up in such a remote, treacherous spot? What possible reason would he have had for going there?
Right. Walking through a national forest at night?
Yeah.
Like
when he was seen like in town.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. So his mother, Dawn Engelbert, has publicly expressed skepticism that Chance would have willingly taken an unsafe route through rough terrain. She noted that the area on the north side of Scottsbluff National Monument is not a typical path for anyone on foot. It would require crossing a canal and bushwhacking through steep, brushy land instead of following the main roads. And this statement was echoed by a local who was out walking his dog when the remains were found. He's not connected to the case at all, but he was also surprised to learn that somebody was found in that particular location because he said that's not really a place where people go.
Yeah, and it's not like this is a shortcut to get to his house or
no, that's the
like
other
that,
thing.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll get to that in a second because I don't understand it. And maybe there are locals who can explain like how or why he would have been there, because just looking at the maps, I can't figure it out really. So Dawn, his mom, said that the family's having a hard time accepting that Chance died by accident because it's hard to imagine that he ended up there on his own. But again, how would somebody have gotten him up there against his will, you know?
Right.
In an early 2025 message to Cowboy State Daily, Dawn said authorities believe Chance may have chosen an ill-fated shortcut trail toward his destination, but she still has more whys than answers. And so, again, you know, you and I are completely unfamiliar with the area.
Yeah.
So I had to see if there was any logical explanation for Chance to have thought this was some sort of shortcut to where he had told people he was heading, which was Torrington, Wyoming, which is just over the Nebraska-Wyoming border. So I Google mapped it, which, you know, is really all we can do at this point.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes sense when you map it. So I put Gearing, Nebraska as the starting point. I added in Tarrytown where he was seen, put the destination in as Torrington, and then added in Scottsbluff National Monument. So what I got when I did all that was a walking route that was nearly 14 hours and takes you on the old Oregon Trail.
But what? He was going to walk for 14 hours?
Right. So that in and of itself is insane. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But when I took out Scottsbluff National Monument from the directions, and I just did the directions to Torrington. It gave me a 12 and a half hour walking route that
so it wasn't a shortcut.
No, it went through towns and mainly followed Route 26.
So why did he go that way?
I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense that I can see. So yeah, I mean, his body was found on a route to Torrington, but it couldn't be called a shortcut. And like, you could say, okay, you don't want to walk on the side of the highway, but like, I don't think that's any more dangerous than walking up these steep bluffs and bushwhacking and, you know.
And he wasn't like, he didn't have a backpack or camping gear or anything, right? Like,
I think he was still wearing the clothes he was wearing when he went golfing earlier that day.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I could think of would be if he had camping gear or whatever, he was going into the national park to camp.
Yeah, but
on his 14-mile hike to his, or 14-hour hike to his house. But that doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't. I mean, especially because they were there visiting in-laws with a baby. It's not like he was, you know, packing camping equipment with them.
Right.
So yeah, I don't understand it. And he left when he was pissed off after a fight. Like, again, he wasn't packing, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And that doesn't mean that I think there's some crazy conspiracy or anything. I'm simply saying it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense if somebody like forcefully made him go out there either.
Yeah, because again, right? How do you do that?
Well, I suppose you could hold him at gunpoint and walk out in this direction. But why go through all that trouble if you had a gun?
Yeah.
And your plan is to kill him. Why wouldn't you just shoot him?
I mean, I guess maybe to make it look like an accident. I don't know.
It seems elaborate and personal.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
but yeah, just elaborate. Like, too elaborate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really far-fetched.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. I can't even imagine, like, how confusing this must be for Chance's family to, like, get this huge answer.
But just
have it make no sense.
Questions. Yeah.
His loved ones have been cleared that the identification of his remains is not the same as closure. A moderator of the Help Find Chance Inglebrook Facebook page wrote, quote, "This is not any type of closure to us. There will always be more questions," end quote. Dawn said that our hearts hurt more than ever. The family is, of course, grateful to finally bring Chance home, but they're still grappling with the circumstances of his death. And they might never find out exactly what happened on that stormy night in 2019 when Chance walked off alone.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially the case is closed now.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to investigate this any further.
No, they were very clear. They're like, this was an accident.
Yeah.
Why of it is not something that they're going to use resources to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
They found him.
It doesn't look like there was foul play.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
It's over. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we should also say that in the 6 years that Chance has been missing, more than just physical searches have been done. Multiple agencies conducted hundreds of interviews and scoured phone and financial records as well, but nothing led to answers. Not a single credible trace of Chance was found until the hiker's discovery in October 2025. Scottsbluff Police Captain Jason Rogers said that the remains were found roughly 3 to 5 miles from where Chance was last seen on camera. The Gearing police and Scottsbluff officials formally closed Chance's case, ruling his death accidental. They held a press conference to explain the findings and to thank all of the agencies and volunteers who had worked the case. As Chance's widow and young son received his remains for burial, the community has been mourning alongside them. This outcome, while tragic, at least answers the question that has haunted everyone for the past 6 years. Chance Engelbert's journey ended on that bluff in Nebraska, and according to authorities, not at the hands of a killer, as many had feared. Still, as the family friend wrote, there will always be more questions about why the events unfolded the way they did.
Hey,
Hey there. I want to take a moment to recommend another podcast called Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse. Mind of a Monster is a podcast series from ID that dives into the minds of notorious serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, and more. This season, they're exploring the chilling story of Kristen Gilbert, a nurse who murders four of her patients between 1989 and 1995, and is suspected of killing dozens more. Criminal psychologist Dr. Michelle Ward takes us inside Kristen's twisted mind, uncovering why she kills and how she manages to do it right in front of her colleagues. The entire season is out now, so you can binge it wherever you get your podcasts. I listened to Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse, and it was really interesting. It's obviously not the type of case that we do on this show, so it was fascinating to get a look into what could cause a person to do something like that. I binged the whole thing too, and now you can listen to Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse, wherever you get your podcasts. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. If you're like me, then you have different family members who have different ailments, and I've recommended Mood to all of them. I legitimately, before recording this, I told my mom about Mood, and she's going to make her first order. Because they have gummies for all sorts of things, for pain relief, for sleeping, for just improving your mood. Their gummies are specially blended and each one feels different. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out in 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I wake up feeling amazing. And each gummy is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. If you've been listening to this show for a while, then you know that I'm a podcaster and a realtor. And on some days, like today, I have to do both. I spent all day in a courthouse watching a trial that we're covering, and then I had to drive an hour and a half away to put a lockbox on a new listing. It was a long day, to say the least, and normally I would have been exhausted at about 3 when I still had several hours to go. But I've recently been adding Everyday Dose into my morning routine, specifically into my morning coffee, and let me tell you, I was driving home late tonight and I felt great. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high-quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane and chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now for Black Friday, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/ATTWG or use code ATTWG at checkout. We covered the case of Mary Johnson, also known as Mary Johnson Davis, back in 2022, just a few months before we covered Chance's story. Mary was a 40-year-old Indigenous woman from the Tulalip tribes in Washington who disappeared just before Thanksgiving 2020. For 5 years, her family, especially her sisters, campaigned tirelessly to keep Mary's case alive in the public eye. In fact, Mary's disappearance helped inspire Washington State's reforms on missing and murdered Indigenous women, including a new alert system for missing Indigenous persons. Throughout those years, Mary's sisters held on to hope that she might be found alive. Sadly, in 2025, they finally got the answer they dreaded. Mary is not coming home. On June 13, 2025, the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office discovered human remains in a remote wooded area of North Snohomish County, Washington. It took several months, but in October, the FBI confirmed through DNA analysis that the remains belonged to Mary Johnson, who had been missing since November 25th, 2020. The identification was made by forensic analysts at the University of North Texas Health Sciences Center, who uploaded a DNA profile of the unknown remains and got a positive CODIS match to Mary. Mary's family and the Tulalip tribes were notified, bringing an end to 5 painful years of uncertainty. Local and federal officials made formal announcements on October 31st, 2025. Sean Ledford, chief of the Tulalip Tribal Police, said in a statement, quote, "With deep respect for the family and Tulalip community, we are heartbroken to confirm that human remains have been positively identified as Mary Johnson Davis, a member of the Tulalip Tribes of Washington," end quote. Chief Ledford added that Mary's case, quote, "remains an active and ongoing investigation," end quote, and he promised that Tulalip police will continue working with Mary's family and the FBI to find answers in her death. The FBI Seattle field office is involved because Mary's case was one of many involving missing Indigenous women where federal help was requested. Special Agent in Charge W. Mike Harrington emphasized the FBI's commitment, saying, quote, "We assure everyone the FBI and our partners are doing everything we can. We will never stop pursuing justice for victims, no matter how long it takes," end quote.
Which means that they suspect something.
Yeah.
But they're not going to give any information out.
Yeah. So we don't know a cause of death. We don't know if they know a cause of death.
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
They might.
Yeah, they might. So they might be withholding that right now, or the remains might have been in a state where they haven't been able to determine a cause of death.
Right.
We also don't know the circumstances under which the remains were found, meaning I don't know if they were buried. I don't know if they were out. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously, like, the circumstances can lead you toward homicide or not homicide.
Right.
Obviously, if it's buried.
Yeah. It's homicide.
Yeah. Right. Or hanging from a tree or, you know, something like that. Right. Yeah. But unfortunately, we just don't have those answers right now. And that's part of why I haven't talked much about this case. I did do a short video about her remains being found, but I kept on kind of checking and hoping that, like, more information was going to be released. And it really hasn't been.
Yeah, it's like you said, they're either keeping everything close to their chest because they're going to investigate.
Yeah.
Or they just don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, we do have a couple of, like, I don't want to say suspects because, like, nobody's been officially named a suspect, but, you know,
persons of interest.
Yeah. Like, we have her estranged ex-husband. We have the person who gave her a ride. She ran into somebody else that day. I mean, like, there were a lot of people kind of in her orbit on the day that she disappeared. Although her husband says that he wasn't anywhere near where she was on the day she disappeared. But like I said, so what's interesting is, you know, the estranged husband obviously has always been
it's always got to be number one
player in this, yeah. Right? But Mary's sisters, Jerry Davis and Nona Blauen, issued a statement via the family's attorney, which was forwarded by Mary's estranged husband. So I don't know. I found that interesting. In it, they said, quote, "We are in disbelief that we will never see Mary again. We all wanted her to come home. She is now being brought back to us, but not like we hoped. It feels like we are in a dream, wanting to wake up and see her. At the same time, our family finally has closure. We are at peace, and now we can rest, knowing our sister has been found and will be brought home, where she is loved and will always be remembered," end quote. It's a bittersweet idea of closure. They have answers, but obviously it's not the outcome they were praying for.
Right.
The discovery of Mary's remains, while bringing some answers, also opened a homicide investigation. Unlike Chance Engelbert's case, authorities have not ruled Mary's death accidental. Now, you know, I don't know that they've officially said it's a homicide investigation, but I mean, there is an investigation.
Yeah, I mean, the clues are all there.
Yeah.
All signs are pointing towards it.
From the start, Mary's disappearance was considered suspicious. She was last seen walking along a road on the reservation, reportedly heading to meet someone for a ride, and then she vanished. Early on, like I said, there were persons of interest, including her estranged husband. Back in 2021, Tulalip Police Detective David Sally told People magazine that the husband was a person of interest, though he has never publicly been named as a suspect. Recently, her husband spoke out about the allegations against him, specifically the idea that he changed his phone number and moved out of state shortly after Mary's disappearance. He said, quote, "My phone number was changed months prior to Mary's disappearance. I moved to Southern California in June of 2021 because my brother and mom moved there. I did not hire a lawyer. I was not even in Washington when Mary was last seen. At that time, I was in Southern California with my family on vacation," end quote.
If that's true, then, I mean, that's a pretty solid alibi.
Yeah.
But they haven't cleared him yet.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah. So, but, you know, they haven't said that he's a suspect. So it's hard to say what the police know about his alibi, you know.
Yeah.
Now that Mary has been found, investigators will be combing through evidence from the recovery site and revisiting interviews to determine what happened to her and who might be responsible. The Tulalip Police, FBI, and Snohomish County Sheriff all stress that this case is active and they are pursuing leads. As Snohomish County Sheriff Susanna Johnson put it, quote, "We hope the recovery brings us one step closer to finding the truth about what happened to Mary," end quote. One immediate step was renewing the reward for information. The FBI is offering up to $10,000, and the Tulalip tribes added $50,000 for information leading to the identification, arrest, and conviction of whomever is responsible for Mary's disappearance. That's a total of $60,000 that's still on the table. Law enforcement is urging anyone who knows something to come forward, even if the information seems minor. After 5 years, Mary's case has at last moved into a new phase, from a missing person search to a death investigation. At Mary's family's request, community members held a vigil after the announcement, honoring her life in the fight to find her. The Tulalip tribe's community is grieving, but they are also determined to get justice. As one tribal leader said in a press release, quote, "Every victim leaves a space in that community which cannot be filled. We will never stop pursuing justice," end quote. Mary's story is a reminder that no one ever stopped looking for her, and now the focus shifts to holding someone accountable for her death. From one long search that ended this year to another, our next case update involves a disappearance from 2012. It's a case that had seemingly gone cold until, incredibly, police tracked down the one man who might hold answers. So our third case update is one that truly shocked me this year. Sage Smith. Sage's story has been close to my heart ever since we covered it in a two-part episode back in 2021. Sage was a 19-year-old who went missing from Charlottesville, Virginia in November 2012. She was a transgender teen who was going to meet a man named Eric McFadden for a date. McFadden, however, had a live-in girlfriend who likely did not know about this. Sage was seen on the pedestrian mall in Charlottesville shortly before this meeting, but was never seen after. Foul play was long suspected in her case, and in 2016, Charlottesville police reclassified Sage's case as a homicide despite not having found her body. Throughout all of this, they were searching for one key person, Eric McFadden, the man she was meeting that night. While original investigators were able to talk to Eric on the phone, he skipped town shortly after Sage went missing, and they were never able to interview him in person. Then, he also essentially disappeared and was officially listed as a missing person by his family in 2019.
It's crazy.
For over a decade, McFadden's whereabouts were a mystery, and we talked about this in our original episodes on the case, but I was a little skeptical that he was actually that good at hiding.
Okay.
I really thought that he was out there, and I really thought that people knew where he was, and police just weren't looking that hard. I doubted that he was holed up in a cabin in the woods for all these years, but apparently investigators just could not find him until now. On November 20th, 2025, the 13th anniversary of Sage Smith's disappearance, Charlottesville Police Chief Michael Cochis held a press conference with a bombshell announcement. Eric McFadden has been located and interviewed. After 13 years of evasions, McFadden was found alive in Los Angeles, California. According to Chief Cochis, Charlottesville detectives developed a fresh lead that McFadden might be in the LA area, and indeed, they tracked him down in October 2025 while he was in the process of attempting to legally change his name.
Wait. He hadn't even changed his name up to this point?
Not legally. So he was going by different names.
Okay.
But like he was still officially Eric McFadden.
Okay.
Police Chief Cochis made it clear that this is a major step forward in Sage's case, saying, quote, "I want Sage's family and this community to hear directly from me. We have not forgotten Sage. We will not forget Sage. And we will continue to seek justice with persistence, compassion, and transparency to this community," end quote. So what do we know about McFadden's return? Cochis revealed some details. Charlottesville detectives actually interviewed McFadden for about an hour in LA in October. McFadden agreed to talk and was cooperative, according to Cochis, and he was not arrested at that time. In fact, McFadden remains a person of interest and not a charged suspect as of the latest update, which means police likely still need more evidence before they can consider any charges.
I mean, do they think that this guy's just going to wait around for them to come to charge him with something? Like, he already left once.
Yeah, kind of. They're like, yeah, no, well, we can find him again. Don't worry about it.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Cochis declined to share what McFadden said in that interview, so we don't have any details as to why he fled back in 2012, where he's been all this time, or what he knows about what happened to Sage. However, the fact that McFadden was trying to change his name and lived in multiple places under aliases speaks volumes about his determination to evade law enforcement.
Right.
At the press conference, police even shared an informational slide showing Sage's photos alongside McFadden's mugshots and his known fake names. So guys, I need you all to listen to these names. Frank Hargrave, Shiloh Mathis, and Miles Bakari, among others. Clearly, McFadden had been running and hiding, though he was in plain sight the entire time. So since all this happened, I've seen in like Facebook groups or pages devoted to Sage's case, people who are putting out posts saying, hey, this is Eric McFadden. He's been living in these places under these names. I want to say he was in North Carolina at one point too. But they show him running fucking 5Ks and like just having a blast, like doing these runs, hanging out, having fun. Like, and of course, I mean, what else would he be doing for the past decade? But like, it's so infuriating
that he was just out there doing his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just it just made me so mad. But now that he's found, Charlottesville police are going after any additional leads that McFadden's reappearance generates. Cochis made a direct appeal, quote, "If you knew him, lived with him, worked with him, or were in any form of a relationship with him, we need to hear from you. Even something you believe is insignificant may be a significant piece of information that helps move this case to a resolution," end quote. He urged anyone who has crossed paths with Eric McFadden in the last 13 years to contact the police. Essentially, investigators are reconstructing McFadden's entire path since 2012, who he spent time with, where he worked, etc. They believe someone out there might have a key puzzle piece. Of course, my first question was your first question. It's like, how did they let him just leave? Like, what the hell? Cochis was confident that even if McFadden tries to run again, quote, "We found him this time. We'll find him again," end quote.
When? In another 10 years?
I know.
I mean, come on.
Like, I don't love that. I mean,
I get that they probably don't have enough to arrest him, but like, I hope that they're going to track him somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just honestly putting a lot more effort into it than they did in 2012. You know, he's a new police chief. It's right. A new group of people. also technology has changed a lot since 2012. It's a little bit easier to track people nowadays.
Yes, very much.
And plus, you know, now that they know all of these aliases and have a rough idea of kind of where he's been and some people he's been associating with, I think that all will help. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a sure thing.
Yeah, I mean, what happens if he goes to Florida? Nobody gets found in Florida.
Exactly. For Sage's family, who have spent 13 agonizing years without answers, this development is monumental. On one hand, the only person who might know what happened to Sage is finally within reach. On the other, until there are charges or a body recovered, the case isn't solved. While many, including us, have talked about how Charlottesville police didn't really handle the case with the urgency that Sage deserved, things have changed in the last couple years. Chief Coaches took over the Charlottesville police in 2022, and when he did, he made Sage's case a priority. In 2023, on the 11th anniversary, Coaches even publicly named McFadden as a critical person of interest and announced new efforts to find him. It appears that it paid off. And of course, the cynical version of me says that these new efforts were just any effort, and it paid off because somebody finally started looking. But, you know, either way, he said he was going to do it and he did it. So good for him. At the press conference, Coaches also said that with McFadden located, the department is reexamining everything with fresh eyes. They're using new technology and forensic techniques that weren't available in 2012. And Coaches told reporters that an investigator is specifically assigned to Sage's case and will keep plugging away. As of the end of 2025, Sage Smith's case is closer to resolution than it has been in years. But it's not there yet. McFadden has not been charged with any crimes related to Sage. Depending on what evidence comes out of his interview and the ongoing investigation, charges could potentially follow, or police might still be working to build a case. We'll have to just keep on following this in 2026 to see what happens. For now, the fact that Eric McFadden has been found does feel like somewhat of a victory. After 13 years of running, he finally had to face questions about Sage. So that's what we know right now. So I'll leave you with this moment from the press conference when Chief Coaches spoke directly about Sage as a person. He said, quote, "Sage was somebody's child, a friend, a beloved member of this community. Sage deserves answers. And Sage deserves the dignity of the truth." You are told your health starts in your gut, but if you're a woman, it all starts with your hormones. When your hormones are off, everything is off, including digestive issues, mood, mental clarity, energy levels, weight management, and so much more. As the new year approaches, imagine hitting refresh and supporting your body with optimal hormone balance. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Perfect for enjoying the holidays and heading into the new year energized. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code ATTWG. Am I the only one who's kind of weirded out by the number of chemicals in cleaning products these days? So I started looking into what I was actually using around the house, and my laundry detergent turned out to be the worst offender. It's full of harsh chemicals like UV brighteners, dyes, and preservatives, which can wreck your skin or trigger allergic reactions. That's why I switched to EarthBreeze. It looks like a dryer sheet, but it's actually laundry detergent. Just toss a sheet into the washer with your clothes and that's it. No pouring, no mess, and no plastic jug. My laundry comes out fresh, soft, and clean without unnecessary chemicals. And right now, you can try EarthBreeze for up to 40% off with free gifts at earthbreeze.com/ATTWG. That's earthbreeze.com/ATTWG to get up to 40% off with free gifts on your first order. Our final case update takes us to a decades-old mystery that many believed would never be solved. But in 2025, the family of Trudy Appleby, a little girl who vanished in 1996, got the news that they'd been waiting for nearly 30 years. We covered the disappearance of Trudy Appleby in 2021. She was just 11 years old when she disappeared from Moline, Illinois in 1996 after reportedly being seen getting into a car with an unidentified man in front of her home. For decades, her father, family, and the community have been haunted by the question, what happened to Trudy? Back in August of 2025, just before the 29th anniversary of Trudy's disappearance, Moline Police Chief Darren Galt and Henry County State's Attorney Catherine Runty announced that a grand jury had indicted 50-year-old Jameson Fisher on charges related to Trudy Appleby's murder. Fisher was indicted on 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of concealment of a homicidal death. We released an update episode shortly thereafter talking about the arrest, but now we've got some more details.
Okay, let's hear it.
In court documents that became public in November, prosecutors revealed a motive for the first time. They alleged that Trudy was abducted and killed because of a drug debt her father owed.
Are you serious?
Yeah. This theory had never officially been stated before, and it was awful to hear. According to a filing by State's Attorney Runty, witnesses are prepared to testify that in August 1996, Trudy's father, Dennis Appleby, was involved in buying methamphetamine from Jameson Fisher. Dennis apparently was seeking a large quantity of meth a few weeks before Trudy disappeared, and a mutual acquaintance introduced him to Fisher as a supplier. Prosecutors say Fisher had a silver Chevy Cavalier at the time, which matches the description of the car seen picking up Trudy. The picture painted is that Fisher kidnapped Trudy as leverage or punishment over Dennis Appleby's drug debt. Even more disturbing are the witness accounts that are now coming to light. One witness says that back in 1996, Fisher told him, quote, "I'm in a fix because I've just kidnapped a girl for a drug debt," end quote. Another witness who came forward in 2016 claims that she actually saw Fisher carrying a lifeless little girl off a boat near a trailer park in Kelowna, Illinois, about half a mile from where prosecutors believe Trudy was killed.
Jesus.
This witness stayed silent for 20 years because she was terrified that Fisher would harm her if she spoke up. There's also a witness who says Fisher once bragged, quote, "no one would ever find Trudy's body," end quote. These are extremely grim details, but they are crucial evidence. One witness even specified that Trudy was strangled and that Fisher confessed to moving her remains, quote, "a couple of times to avoid detection."
And none of these witnesses, I mean, I get the whole fear factor here, but for that many years?
I know.
Wow.
It's just devastating to think about all these people who apparently knew.
Yeah.
It appears that by 2020, when Fisher was named a person of interest, investigators had gathered some of these witness statements. But it likely took additional corroboration to finally convene a grand jury, which makes sense because you can't arrest somebody just on
witness statements,
especially when likely these are people who were also buying drugs from him. And,
right.
You know, it's not exactly.
It's not an airtight case.
Right.
Yeah. You can't bring that at that point.
The indictment alleges that Fisher strangled Trudy on or about August 21st, 1996, and knowingly concealed her death by hiding or moving her body. Notably, Trudy's body has still never been found, which makes this a case built on circumstantial evidence and witness testimony. However, absence of a body did not stop the authorities from pursuing murder charges. Jameson Fisher has pleaded not guilty to all charges. In a jailhouse interview with KWQC-TV in November, Fisher proclaimed his innocence and even accused the police of framing him because he was a troublemaking drug dealer. He insists that he never met Trudy and had nothing to do with her disappearance. Understandably, Trudy's family doesn't put any stock in Fisher's denials. And prosecutors were quick to point out in court that despite Fisher's claims, none of the witnesses against him have been offered any deals for their testimony. According to them, these people are coming forward because they want to tell the truth at long last, not because they're getting something in return. Of course, a heartbreaking aspect of these new revelations is how they involve Trudy's father, Dennis. The idea that Trudy was targeted due to her father's drug activity is devastating. I can only imagine the guilt and the pain that Dennis might be feeling. However, Trudy's family has been very clear on one point. They do not blame her father. Trudy's uncle, Ray Edelman, who was her mother's brother, spoke to local media and said that even if Dennis made mistakes, he didn't deserve what happened. Quote, "That was his personal life. That was his choices. No, he didn't deserve to have his child taken away, no more than my sister deserved to have her taken away," end quote. But now I understand, because when we did our update episode, I talked about how Dennis hadn't spoken publicly since Fisher's arrest.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I was wondering if he was him either.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder if he's ill. Like, I was afraid that he had even died.
Yeah,
you know, and I didn't know what was going on, but yeah, now it seems like this is probably why. But the family is remaining united. They all want the focus to be on who did this to Trudy and bringing that person to justice, rather than casting blame internally. Sadly, if you listen to our original episode, you know that Trudy's mother died years ago without knowing what happened to her daughter. Uncle Ray told reporters, quote, "My primary thing is bringing Trudy to lay next to her mother at the cemetery," end quote. As of the end of 2025, Jameson Fisher is still awaiting trial. The case is being prosecuted in Henry County, Illinois, and the next pretrial hearing is scheduled for December 19th, 2025. I mentioned in our update episode that right before his indictment in Trudy's murder, Fisher was arrested in a meth trafficking case. He ended up accepting a plea deal in that case that will already keep him behind bars for 25 years, meaning that even if he is somehow acquitted in Trudy's case, he still won't be walking free anytime soon. But the hope, of course, is that the Illinois trial will bring a conviction and, finally, justice for Trudy. Trudy's family members have already stated that they will be at every court hearing. Ray Edelman said, quote, "If there's going to be testimony and there's going to be the truth come out about what happened, I have to know for my peace of mind. I have to know the hows and the whys and the wheres," end quote. Trudy's family has waited almost 30 years for those answers, and they're going to see this through. It's hard to overstate what an extraordinary turn of events this is. A case that was cold for nearly 3 decades now has a viable path toward resolution. It shows that cold cases are only cold until they're not. New witnesses can emerge, loyalties can shift, and investigators can uncover that one tip that changes everything, even years later.
This is just so crazy. Like, it's and just so heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Like, I just cannot imagine what her dad is going through.
Yeah, I can't either. And I mean, I think we've known for years that whoever did this to Trudy was known to the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about the other suspects who have since passed away. Fisher is the only one who's still alive of the three men who were suspected in her death. But yeah, they were all people that we knew were known to Trudy and known to the Applebees. And again, like, the witness who saw her getting into the car, you know, said that she looked like she was getting into the car willingly. Like, they didn't think it was anything odd at all.
Yeah.
Until obviously she came up missing. So, you know, we knew that, but yeah, it is just awful to know that it was just over a drug debt.
Yeah.
Ugh. This year has shown that time does not diminish the determination to find the missing and seek justice. In Chance Engelbert's case, an exhaustive search ended with an unexpected conclusion of an accidental death, not the foul play that many suspected, giving his family answers, but also new heartache. In Mary Johnson's case, the discovery of her remains brought a sad end to the search, yet opened a new quest to hold someone accountable. For Sage Smith, 13 years passed, but the man who may know her fate has been found, which is a sign that persistence can pay off even after a decade. And for Trudy Appleby, nearly 29 years later, the puzzle pieces finally aligned to bring charges against a suspect. The families of Chance, Mary, Sage, and Trudy have endured the unimaginable. 2025 brought them some answers and also let them know that the world had not forgotten their loved ones. We'll continue to follow these cases into 2026, as well as all the other cases we've covered over the years. If there's one takeaway from all of this, it's that time may pass, but the determination to find the truth remains. For more information on these cases, you can hear our full episodes on Chance Engelbert, Mary Johnson, Sage Smith, and Trudy Appleby, wherever you're listening to this now. You can see all of our sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!